Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about slowing down your travel, preparing for vacation, and taking your time on these trips. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. I am super pumped for today's conversation. We're going to talk about what it means to slow down when it comes to traveling around the world. What is this phenomenon called slow travel? How does it even work? All of these questions and many, many more as we get into a great money talk with today's money buddy. Today's money buddy is Susie. Susie is a wife and mother of two who's embraced a semi-nomadic lifestyle for the past 3 years. Splitting her time between Spain, Germany, and Colorado, through her coaching business, she helps families create financial plans for long-term and slow family travel. Susie also hosts the Wander World School and Slow Family Travel podcast, where she shares the financial and logistical stories of traveling families and world school creators to inspire meaningful travel experiences. And this is going to be a great conversation. I'm really excited for each one of you to hear this today. The money talking points for this week's episode are: first, what is slow travel? Second, how can everyone benefit from elements of slow travel in their life? And third, what is your favorite vacation that you've ever taken? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Susie to the show.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, we're both pretty excited for this conversation. We spent a good amount of time at FinCon talking about how this could be a really powerful tool for people to look at their travel differently. I shared how, while it wasn't specifically slow travel, when my wife and I went to Hawaii, we spent some extra prolonged periods of time in some places, and how that was super beneficial to being able to actually enjoy it and to actually get some relaxation from our vacation. And I'm excited to learn from one of the masters out there about slow travel. So this will be really fun. Could you maybe kick us off just with a definition so that we know what slow travel actually is?
Yeah, this is a great question to start with. Everyone is going to define it differently based on what their perception of slow travel means. But for me, it means staying in one place for an extended period of time. This may mean weeks or even several months. So it's a mental shift from trying to go, 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 fit as much in one vacation as possible, and really getting to settle into one location, living like a local for longer than someone may initially feel like they want to be in one location. I consider it a way to transition from being more of a tourist or just passing through area and really truly living in a community. You're connecting more intentionally with the local culture. You have more time to what's happening this weekend, what cultural events are coming up, what activities are going on that I could participate in beyond just the typical top three things to do in this destination. You're also trying more food from the area, possibly getting outside of some of the touristy restaurants. I know in Sevilla, where we spend months at a time, the restaurant prices and quality truly can be very different. And so when I think about accommodations, when you're somewhere for a longer period of time, you can be more intentional about where you're staying, giving back in a different way, or not needing to stay right in the touristy location because you can use public transit to get in and out of the area more easily and visit areas where they are very receptive to tourists and travelers. There are lots of smaller cities in Spain that are very welcoming to tourists and want you to stay longer. They want you to spend money and experience the culture. It's just a matter of thinking about it a little differently.
Yeah. And there was a lot of pieces you added in there about how this could be beneficial and improve the area you're going to and your life. Like, I liked the piece you mentioned about the economy. Are you just supporting the chain restaurants available anywhere in the world in tourist destinations like McDonald's or Starbucks? Like, are you just giving the money to the same corporations you would give back home? Or are you giving them to the mom and pop pizza shop because you're staying out in the suburbs or whatever they would call it in like Italy or something like that? There's a lot of different benefits there, and this could benefit everyone in different ways. How can everyone take something of benefit from this? What are the kind of things that you see that benefit across the board?
I encourage people to shift from focusing on rushing and trying to do as much as possible to really experiencing one thing at a time. In our go, go, go society, we always have our phone going, an earbud in, we're trying to get to the next thing. So that is actually where this can start, is right at home. dedicating a weekend to exploring a new neighborhood in your city, leaving your car behind and exploring a new neighborhood or a new place that you haven't walked. Yeah, you haven't walked around this neighborhood. I mean, I know our neighborhood like the back of my hand, but it's fun to sometimes just go to a whole new neighborhood and walk around. And what stores are there? What decorations are up for Halloween and different things in different neighborhoods? Also, you can experience this at home by cooking a meal with like only ingredients that you got from an international market, something totally different. And so it's a way to not just make the same old dinner, but make it a whole experience. Something, I'm not the greatest chef. My husband does the cooking. So I appreciate when he tries new things, but I'm motivated sometimes to try something new. That'll inspire me to cook. Also, just noticing what's around you more. Taking deep breaths, practicing some of that mindfulness wherever we are. So that's stuff we can do at home. But when we're traveling, slow travel can help us more deeply immerse into the community that we're in. Just having those meaningful experiences. Like I said, our family lives half the year in Sevilla, Spain. We spent a full school year there, and then we've been back for half a year. We're going back for the next January to July. And so I'm really excited to go back because I know what I'm going back to. There's some conveniences already built in. I know my favorite grocery stores, but there's still new things to discover within just an hour radius of where we live. There's so much history. Italica is Roman ruins. It's a little bit outside of town. So if you're only there for a couple of days, you probably are going to miss it. I also find that stress on travel is a big one. We travel to do something different and break out of the stress of day-to-day life. So when we show up somewhere and fill our days up, like a typical Tuesday with work and family and life and kids, we don't really slow down and relax. Hawaii needing a chance to relax. So it allows for actually a more restful trip. I talked a little bit about sustainability, but also that plays a role with reducing our carbon footprint. If we're able to walk more or take public transit, it really does allow us to reduce our reliance on things that are not always ideal for the local economy. For example, a public transit system takes a while. Buses get me where I want to go.
We just went to New York. We didn't rent a car on purpose. I love public transit, so it was easier for me. But teaching my family that went with us and stuff like that, it's just interesting to learn. We had so many locals help us out, which I think goes to your slow travel point of people are just maybe a little more receptive to you because you don't look like you're trying to run a marathon through their town.
Exactly. You're ambling through the neighborhood. You're open to more of those conversations. We certainly have relied on an Uber here and there as a family of four with luggage. That's just easier. And my husband makes a point of always talking to the driver. So you do get a bit of that cultural piece with anything when you're in a culture, but I really like the sustainability piece of public transit when it's available. Financial savings can play a big role with slow travel. So obviously we're on a money podcast. We're going to talk about financial savings. It's more cost effective when you spend money on the flight to get somewhere, but once you're there, you're living like a local. You're really just swapping expenses for what you would be spending at home. I think that makes a big difference in the expense piece of it when we're talking about planning for travel. You're planning for a 2-week budget and you still have to pay for everything. If you're planning for a 1-week trip and you still have to pay for everything at home on top of that, it really does add up. But if we're able to travel for longer and reduce or eliminate those costs at home, we're just swapping it for the costs that we are experiencing on our travels.
Yeah, which makes it, like you said, a whole lot more affordable because you're already normally paying for that instead of it being your $4,000 a month at home budget plus a $2,000 vacation because you were only gone for so many days and you had to pay for all these Ubers and everything to get you from point A to point B at very specific times and all of those tickets and itineraries and things like that. That can add up really quick and then suddenly your vacation is blowing up your budget instead of being a part of your budget. One of the things I'm thinking of here is you're telling us some of your slow travel stories. Compare it to your fast travel stories. Like think about how I'm going to share a funny story here that I don't think has ever seen the light of day, but my wife and I did a fast travel to Tampa for a work trip for me. And we're like, we're right near Disney World. Let's go over there. We went to Disney World from opening until 4 p.m. And you can't see Magic Kingdom in that amount of time. We sure saw a whole lot of it and we were racing around. And I remember the Tron ride, you had to get your timed entry. And our timed entry was like right at that barrier of when we needed to leave for the airport. And we're like, we'll be fine. Airports are always a little easier than people give them credit for. And we'll be okay. No, we were racing out of there like the fastest run, jog, walk you've ever kind of seen through a hot parking lot. We're sweaty from racing around Disney World the whole day. We had a great time. We definitely took advantage of our youth and being able to do that. But we get to the airport, we're sitting on the plane after this whole day, just like stress, time packed, fast travel, as you would call it. I lean over to my wife and I'm like, someone smells so bad on this plane. And she leans back to me and she says, that's you. And it was because we were just racing through the hot sun across hot asphalt, hot parking lots, trying to rush this. I felt bad for the poor person next to me on the plane, but that's the comparison. You don't have to deal with those stressors or rushing around when you do this slow travel approach.
Yes, it makes for good stories, though, sometimes when you have those experiences. I will say, in my 20s, when I was single or traveling with a friend, absolutely had more energy and excitement and enthusiasm and stamina for fast travel. So I think there's a time and a place for that. It just is a trade-off from those experiences that we might be able to gain from slow travel at whatever phase of life we're in. I do know sometimes at the end of a trip, you almost have to look back at your photos to be like, where did I even go? So whereas those things do just settle in your memory a little more when you've experienced it over longer periods of time.
Yeah, that's honestly a great place to put it, because those memories from our Hawaii trip that I mentioned to you will just randomly come up and there'll be very specific elements of it versus the fast travel Orlando to Disney World trip. I remember the Tron ride because it was really cool. I remember racing through the parking lot to get home instead of actually remembering the trip and remembering elements of the trip. You're just trying to remember the logistics around it because you had to keep them so tight and on schedule instead of remembering the stuff in between there.
Exactly.
What is your favorite vacation you've ever been on? I know you said you go to Spain often. Is there a different slow travel trip that you've been on?
Yes, I am very grateful to have had in my lifetime a lot of amazing travel memories. My parents value travel growing up. And actually, my mom just gave me this travel journal from a month-long trip we took to Europe after summer of eighth grade. And this is the epitome of slow travel in some ways. We really only spend our time in a little bit in a small area. We had a rental car. We stayed with families that my mom knew. And really, it was not about going to London, Paris, and Rome. It was about going to these little villages and experiencing just what was life there. Life was like. So it's been fun to read this journal this last week. It takes me back to there. And then I also took some long sabbaticals in my 20s. We've been living in Spain recently, and I lived in Germany for 2 years too. So I think every trip has its purpose. I think back to a trip I took in 2010. It was to Morocco for a friend's birthday. There were four of us. We got to the desert overnight in the desert, took camels out there. We got there and realized we had forgotten our friend's birthday cake day out in the desert. And then our host on this trip surprised all of us and had snuck it onto a camel and surprised all of us with this cake out under the stars in the middle of the desert. It was so memorable to this day, one of my favorite trips. I think there is a lot of benefit to slowing down. And we have to sometimes get there on our own, where we take a trip that says, oh, that was a little stressful, or that didn't work well for me. What can I, and we live, we learn, we can do something different next time to ideally learn what our travel philosophy is and how to put that into action when we make our travel plans.
Yeah. And I think this can also be a period of seasons sort of approach. Like I mentioned, for my wife and I, we're in a stage where we don't have kids. So we can race around amusement parks, or we went to Bryce Canyon National Park one time, and I think we hiked just under 30 miles in like 4 days. We did all the hikes that were there, and that's something you can't do with a stroller. That's something you can't necessarily do with toddlers chasing behind you. That may force you to slow down, but then maybe they're all growing up and they can keep up with some of that energy too. So maybe you pick up a little bit more fast travel. This can ebb and flow in both directions, and I think that's really cool. It's just really about implanting these ideas that there's a different approach to all this. Every single trip doesn't have to be this 8 a.m. to midnight itinerary with every minute planned out and every single step of the day figured out. You can take it a little bit slower. How do people begin to actually plan these slower travel trips?
That is a really good question. I think the first step is defining your why. Why do you want to take this particular trip or go to this destination? What is the purpose? So for us with Spain recently, it really has been language acquisition. which is why slow travel is so important. Because if you're somewhere longer, you can take classes, you can really immerse yourself in the language and the culture. So that is our big why for now. If our why was to visit the seven wonders of the world, well, then we probably would have to up the travel speed. The first step is to understand your why. And this is the fun part as well. You get to dream with your partner, family, like, why do we want to do this? What's important to us? Sometimes people have a connection to a place. We go to Germany a lot because my husband grew up there. Even though we visit family, I still think it's great to understand, it's for my children who are not being raised in Germany, what is German culture like and what are some things that are important in the German culture? So that is important to start with the why.
You mentioned that we need to figure out our why and understand how that is going to play into this. This is a money show, so let's make sure we talk about the budget piece of this. How do people prepare their money and their finances to do these 3, 4, maybe week or month long trips?
So it's all about creating a clear financial blueprint or a framework for what your financial planning could be like for this trip. So we talked about connecting to the why. This is the dreaming, defining your goals. You might want to get inspired through podcasts like mine, where we feature long-term traveling families and world school opportunities, or Instagram obviously is a source of a lot of travel inspiration, though I do encourage to look beyond just what is popular in social media.
My wife and I have been burned by Instagram recommendations where it looks idyllic on Instagram, and then you get up there and you're like, this is kind of lame.
Yes.
So be careful.
Yes, very good. And I will say I'm so happy some of my long-term travels in my 20s were before social media. So we went there at the recommendation of a friend who was like, I had a great experience here. A lot of people went to Southeast Asia, and we had a friend and I were there for 4 months. We had a great time just exploring whatever sounded good, like talking to real people, what their experiences were. So scratch Instagram, talk to real people, but really also just connect with why this would be important to you. And then creating that realistic travel budget. This is where you can utilize different tools, looking up the cost of living at your desired location, hopping on rental sites. Airbnb is obviously a place to start. You can see the difference in prices from staying in the center and touristy area to staying outside of the city center. Oh, and look, there's a bus line. I can be in the center in 30 minutes. And if I'm there for a month, I cut my housing costs in half. I recommend, what are the cities that are like the number 10 to 20 biggest cities in Spain? They're not on everyone's tourist radar. They are amazing cities with a lot of things going for them. Top five, the top eight even. You can look at sites like Numbeo. You can also look at things like Home Exchange, Trusted House Sitters. If you want to go to England, there are so many Trusted House Sitters. If you like pets, you could stay for free at these amazing properties probably for an entire year, and you get to walk a cute dog while you're there or something. Maybe there's a world school pop-up hub or a community that you want to participate in. And these are just families or educational opportunities that people put on in different parts of the world. And they're usually pretty low cost or no cost. There are some that are very expensive. So you're looking at, what am I going to maybe spend? You could look at your average budget for food and things, but honestly, you're going to spend food at home or on the road. So as long as you look at transportation, accommodations, and then maybe the schooling piece if kids are in the picture. So take your one big flight on points, and then when you're there, use public transit or lower cost ways to get around. Now that you have an idea of a budget, add at least a 10%, 15% buffer in for unexpected costs. Then you can look at, okay, what are my current finances? What are my current savings, investments, and financial abilities to pay for this trip? And then the fourth piece is, what is my income? So if you are renting out your home back at your home base while you travel, is that going to cover your expenses at home? And is there going to be some extra left over that you can include as part of your income? My husband works remotely. I love that flexibility. I know that it's not as popular as it was a couple, 2020 when it really kicked off, but there are still fully remote companies that allow short periods of time for you to be outside of your home base. That means you bringing your income with you. What other income streams have you set up or could you set up? A lot of people will save up for a gap year, right? And they'll put it in high yield savings and they'll just live off of that. What is some of the income that you have now or that you could create? And what is the housing situation for back home? And then you can put all that together into a financial plan. It says, okay, I have this amount of income. I expect my travel to cost this much. I need to save up the amount in between so that you have a cash cushion to live off of. So I'm a big fan of COSFI. That's what we are practicing right now. We saved before. We're basically spending all that my husband and I make because this is the time to do it. 6 and an 8-year-old, they're expensive, but we're having a lot of fun. And if, let's say, your kids are really young and you're like, I don't want to travel with them. It sounds stressful because little kids are a lot of work with traveling. Maybe you plan on saving up for and doing it when your kids are a couple years from now. You really have time to put that plan into place. Just remember, the longer you go and the more you can swap expenses, so renting your place out or even moving out of your place. Mm-hmm. I did a 10-month sabbatical trip where I had stuff in the basement of my parents' house. I had no expenses at home. Made it really easy to travel around Southeast Asia for probably, I don't know, I mean, this was a long time ago, but I mean, not more than like $1,000 or $2,000 a month. I have families right now that share that they spend about $3,000 a month living in Vietnam for a month. So you can really do this very affordably when you can do it longer.
Yeah, there are a lot of options is what I'm hearing. You really covered a wide array of things right there in terms of options to make this affordable. My favorite one that you mentioned is switch your Google Maps to public transit view and just look at those colored lines and see, maybe you can stay like 5 feet from a bus route or a light rail line or whatever it may be in that area. And it's significantly cheaper, or you just walk down some steps out of your room, get on the train, and you take a 15-minute train ride into the towns you want to go see. We did that in New York. We stayed in the financial district at the south end of town. It was cheaper, but it was right next to one of the subway stops where we had it memorized by the end, which, like you said, you begin to learn these transit routes. And if you were just taking Ubers or taxis and stuff around, you really don't know where you are in the town because they're just kind of shuttling you around. But it was kind of cool when we were able to get around to where we wanted to go without having to use a map to get around New York. And preparing your finances doesn't have to be that difficult. Like you said, your spending can be optimized on a credit card, and then you use points for a comfortable flight instead of trying to stretch yourself thin for a red-eye flight overnight across the ocean. That sounds miserable. You really have so many options with all this. That's really what I'm learning here. And your idea to have a buffer in there is a great one, because something is going to go slightly askew, something will go wrong. You forget that cake and then you need to buy a new cake or something like that. But what is some sort of emergency or surprise that you've had to deal with while slow traveling that people may need to consider?
Financial surprises are going to show up in travel more than our day-to-day life. Yeah. Just it's not if, it's when. That's because at home, a lot of the things are predictable. We know what we're doing day in and day out. But on the go, there are just all sorts of different things to experience. Mm-hmm. So I'll share two. Our first day showing up in Spain in August of 2023, after that terrible red-eye flight to Europe in economy, because we do have to pay for 4 tickets. So we do the budget with points. We show up and we're moving into the place we're going to stay for a month before our longer term rental. Stuff was coming in and basically we had a suitcase stolen because it was outside for a while in the front. It was this person just completely opportunistic, took the whole suitcase, 50-pound suitcase. I totaled everything up and did replace. It was like the medications and contacts and ski gear. And I mean, it was a couple $100s to replace everything there. And our trip insurance I had even bought for the flight was not covering. So, you know, some of that, who knows? So, but I would say also, when going long term or slow travel, you're going somewhere for an extended period of time. One thing that can be an expense that you might not consider is visas and some of the bureaucracy related to that. So those are things to consider from a financial aspect, though.
Yeah. And those are some things that you can do research on. There's definitely communities around traveling to these areas that can make that a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's someone listening that's considering a trip to Spain, like, they're listening to the perfect person to ask questions to. And there's always these people out there that are willing to bounce ideas off of you. There's community that can be built around these sort of things. Maybe you connect with someone through a podcast that lives in the area you're trying to go, and then you get that locals guide and thoughts and opinions on what to actually see and what's actually worth it and how to avoid the super busy areas and all of that sort of fun stuff. But Susie, this has been a great conversation, but to wrap us up here, I got two final questions. The first one will be, how can people connect with you online?
Yes, people can find me at the Wander Wool School and Slow Family Travel Podcast. If you're listening on a podcast player right now, Search for the Wander World School podcast. We have about 20 episodes up so far. So lots of stories over there, and also a website, SusieMayWander.com. We'd love to connect to anyone that wants to be a guest on the podcast, or if you have questions about financial preparation for long-term and slow travel.
Fantastic. And of course, links will be in the show notes. So if you missed something that we said, or you want to connect with Susie, please head over to the show notes, click on her podcast or her website and connect with her over there. But Susie, say it's day one. You've never gone on one of these slow travel trips. What's one thing you wish you knew at that very first step about slow travel?
That you will not know everything from the get-go. As much preparation as you may have put into this trip, and I advocate for preparation, especially in the financial side of things, know that you are going to pivot as you learn what you want as a family, what is ideal for you. There are some families who are like, wait, actually, I need to move a little quicker. More energy at the beginning of their trip, and then they slow down. It's all going to change as you go. When we first decided to go to Spain, I would not imagine that here we are 2 years later, still spending 6 months of the year in Spain. We've really developed a love for that region and the community. Allow yourself to be flexible and open to surprises that may present themselves and are sometimes the most emotionally and mentally rewarding parts of the trip are the things that we never even planned for.
Yeah, I remember as you're saying that, I was thinking about that same Hawaii trip. When we land, we get this weather alert that there's a hurricane coming in. We didn't realize we were going to Hawaii during hurricane season. We land and the big island was going to get the hurricane, but we were likely going to get remnants of it and the ocean wasn't going to be calm. And we had a scuba dive tour booked for that day. So we land, realize there's going to be a hurricane this coming weekend. And we get a phone call from the tour company saying we need to reschedule. So those sort of things will happen. And it was literally like the moment we landed, as soon as we get cell phone service, we're like having to deal with this. Honestly, having slow travel built in and a little bit more gap in your itinerary allowed us to say, yeah, we'll put it on this day. We'll move these to this day. We'll cancel this one thing that's a little bit less of a priority. It wasn't that bad and it worked out great. So there will be things that are going to throw speed bumps and hiccups in your slow travel plans. So be prepared for them and be willing to adjust. But Susie, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to chat with you.
Thank you so much to Susie for coming on this week's episode. And that was a great conversation about slow travel and how it can impact your finances. I want to wrap up this episode today with two quick points to talk about. The first one is identifying your travel why. And of course, this is a pretty classic and it's become a pretty popular conversation to ask, what is your why? Well, what is your travel why? This is going to be a great extra money talking point to tag onto this episode. Go talk with your friends or family members or a fellow money buddy about your travel why. Maybe you don't like to travel and that's okay, but this happens to be an area that a lot of people like to explore and think about. So what is your travel why? For me and my wife, our travel why is seeing great sights. Right now we're traveling a lot in the United States and we love to see nature and awesome epic areas like New York City. We went to Portland, we went to Hawaii, we went to all the national parks in Utah. We love national parks. That's a big part of our why right now. And like I mentioned to Susie, we're in a stage where we can travel a little bit faster. We can fit in more stuff. So when we go to an area, we do like to cram stuff in. Like we went to Portland. My wife drove another hour to go hike some waterfall in the area while I was busy. And then we went to Cannon Beach and the coast. So we did a lot of driving all across the state. We actually went from New York City the week before to the Oregon coast the next week. And of course, there was a plane flight in there. We didn't drive across the entire country, but right now we're in a stage where that's totally doable for us. And in the future, we'll probably have to slow down. We've thought about trips in the future where maybe we rent a cabin in the mountains and take a much more slow approach to it and just begin to see the nature in the area. So there's a lot of different things that you can do when you're traveling, but it is important to identify your why so that you know how you can spend in that area to truly maximize your enjoyment. The other thing that I want to round out the episode with is the third money talking point. Another great one to help you identify your why. That third money talking point is, what's the favorite vacation that you've ever taken? For me and my wife, it's our trip to Hawaii. It was a much slower trip. We were there for about 12 days. There was a hurricane that threw off our plans. We actually sat on the road to Hana for, I think, an hour or two because of a downed tree on the road to Hana because of the hurricane. And it was raining so hard we couldn't roll down the windows to get fresh air. That trip helped us identify some of the things we enjoy or don't enjoy. Like we stayed on a beach side property. It was kind of near Sunset Beach on, I believe it was Oahu. And that allowed us every morning and every evening to swim in the ocean and enjoy the sunrises and sunsets. And that was something we realized we really enjoyed. We also made sure to spend plenty of time getting shaved ice. That was something we learned we enjoyed a lot during our time in Hawaii. And it helped us realize to find local places to spend money. We enjoy supporting a local economy and being able to contribute in that way. Our trip to New York City, we realized that we chatted with a lot of locals and they were honestly very nice. We came into it with a stereotype that New York was going to be a little crazy. People were going to be a little bit mean. People were nothing but nice to us, but I think that's also because we weren't trying to rush around. We weren't trying to get people out of our way and push through tourist crowds. We were slowing down. We were taking a nice bike ride around Central Park. We were always using the subway and being nice and methodical about how we were getting around town. That allowed us to interact more with the locals, which is super fun and enjoyable to do. So take this last talking point about where your favorite vacation was and go talk about it with a family member or friend. Try to pick out those elements that were maybe slower or that you really enjoyed that you could take and apply to your next trip. But how has this idea of slow travel impacted you? Throughout this whole episode, I was thinking back to our episode on mini retirements with Jillian Johnsrud. That's a great one to pair with this episode. Honestly, we've had a theme of different options around traveling lately, whether it's mini retirements, spending 6 months in an area, travel hacking your way to make sure it's free, or slow travel. There's a lot of different ways that you can approach this, and that's really just what I want to bring with this podcast in general. There's a lot of different ways that you can approach money, a lot of different ways you can approach travel, and when you sit down, plan it out, and think about it, you're going to have unlimited options. You can do what you want with your money, and that's what I really want to hit home. If you want to travel fast, go for it. If you want to travel slow and methodical and intentional, go for it. You can do whatever you want with some intentionality and planning. But that does it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, the best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the newsletter. Head over to moneytalk.show and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, consider reaching out to me. I am a financial coach and I would love to work with you and help you figure out your budget so that you can do this slow travel more. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go out and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.